Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 256. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. And I want to debunk the rumors that Chris Clegg has also been acquired by the Los Angeles Dodgers. I know they're getting everybody these days, but Chris Clegg is not a member of the Dodgers, at least not this time. Maybe that changes in the future. But, Chris, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. And I wouldn't be opposed. They've got the money. They've got the player development. They've got everything that you could want. So why not? But at the moment, no. Still an impending free agent. So I'm not a part of the Dodgers org, but everybody else is apparently. And I don't think they're done even after getting Tyler Glass. Now, they may not even be close to being done, which is wild. But here we are. And I think they're just going to make a super team and they're going to be the evil empire of the West now.
I still think they're getting Yamamoto. Like when you hear that some of the players that went were basically their big names. Mookie went, Otani went. I think it was Mookie, Otani, Freddie, and was it Will Smith?
I can't remember.
I think there was four of them. Or it was at least the other three, and maybe Will Smith as well. So, like, all right, yeah. They're sending everybody. Obviously, West Coast, which it sounds like he wants West Coast. Maybe I'm just imagining that, but I think they get him. I want him so badly in the Red Sox, but it just feels like another Dodger signing. They're gonna put him up there with Glasnow. Also got Bobby Miller in there. It's gonna be really good. This will be fine even without Kershaw. Even Gonsolin out for the year, they'll be fine. Plus the top of that lineup is ridiculous, but they could use you as like a pinch runner.
Some decent speed.
Yeah, or they need to up their team golf skills. You get the golf game down, so they want a ringer for a team golf outings or something like that. Maybe they could.
Captain's choice.
Yeah, there you go. But all right, we're going to do our first base dynasty rankings today. Obviously, we did the prospect rankings earlier in the week, last episode, so check that out. We switch over to the dynasty side of things, which we'll still have a couple prospects mixed in, though not a lot. I think there's only like one or two at most mixed in like the back end of these top 25. So odd position. Once you get past like the first half of these 25, it starts getting meh pretty quickly. But Before we get into it, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm Eric Cross 04. Show's at Toolshed Pod. Make sure you give that 5-star rating and review. We greatly appreciate those. And to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for all of our work. And let's jump right into it, Chris. You know, I already started with the error on my sheet here. When I first put the names on there, didn't even put Bryce Harper on there. My brain does not think of him as a first baseman, even though he's actually first base only eligible, at least for this season. So I guess we'll before we start talking Harper, let's give our top 10 rankings first off. So, Chris, why don't you lead us off?
All right. So I have Harper at number one spot. No surprise. Came back really strong here. I have Freddie Freeman still at number two. Just feels like he's a well-oiled machine that's just going to be really good for a long time. Followed by Matt Olson, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and Pete Alonso to round out the top five. Then I have Cody Bellinger, Tristan Casas, Josh Naylor, Vinny Pasquantino, and Spencer Torkelson to round out the top 10.
So I also have Harper 1, and then 2 through 5 is just like this massive glob for me that they're all like within 6-7 spots in my overall. Right now I have Olson 2, Freeman 3, Vlad Jr. 4, Pete Alonso 5, then Tristan Casas 6, Cody Bellinger 7, Vinny Pasquantino 8, Christian Encarnacion Strand 9, and also rounding up my top 10 with Mr. Spencer Torkelson. Let's start right at the top there with Bryce Harper. Obviously, outfielder, turned first baseman after he came back from the injury to help his elbow. Starts off this year, first base only eligible. How long do you think this lasts, Chris? Do you think this is maybe more, maybe not permanent, but more of a thing moving forward as he gets older? Obviously, he's 30 years old now. Do you think we see him play at least enough first base to continue eligibility at least in the next year?
Yeah, definitely. And the team's come out and said that he will be the first baseman, at least in 2024. Beyond that, we don't know for sure. But I have a hard time at this point believing that they push him back to the outfield. So I think the first base is definitely here to stay. Here was a quote from Dombrowski as far as like rotating between first and outfield. It says, really, the one thing that we had talked about is we would do one or the other, but not both. Harper would do anything, but even our training staff, everybody felt that he could do it, but let's settle for one spot, that being first base, because he still has things to learn at first base, so it's going to take a while for him to go ahead and learn everything. It was always more of a situation of doing one or the other, and that was about this year, and then this coming year, it's been discussed that he would play there as well, so ultimately, I think at least we'll see him with first base for 2024 and 2025. But I have a hard time believing that he just goes back to the outfield. And if he's playing first base in 2024, why is he going to go back in 2025? I don't know. With that move, they obviously are letting Rhys Hoskins walk. So it seems like it's Bryce Harper's job, which is pretty interesting. But it's, to me, that's what it looks like from what I'm reading.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. And I'm actually okay with it. It's just, you know, my home keeper league team where I have a lot of outfielders and didn't really have any long-term first baseman. Now I do with Bryce Harper at first. But I think that's good for him, too. I think that maybe helps keep him on the field a bit more moving forward. I'm sure he'll DH some as well. So, yeah, I'm good with this move. And he's actually 31 now. He just turned 31 about a month and a half ago. But I'm good with this move. And I think if it can help prolong the elite years we see from Harper, is obviously when he's been on the field, he's been pretty damn elite or near elite forever now. And hopefully we can get more of that, more than the 546 plate appearances he got last year. And obviously recovering from the surgery, which limited him to the first month and a half of the season on the IL. So I like this move a lot. And I think he's going to be, assuming he doesn't fall off production-wise, I think he's my locked-in number one first baseman here, because this next tier, I just like Harper's just inside my top 10. I don't really see anybody in this next second tier getting up near top 10. Maybe for some people they are, but this was a really hard tier to really rank. I've gone back and forth on the second tier, obviously, with Olson, Freeman, Vladdy Jr., and Pete Alonso. And I think the one that you'll probably see the widest range of rankings, at least out of these four guys, is probably Vlad Jr. Obviously, some people are still holding on to that 2021 year when he hit 311 with 48 home runs. But over the last couple of years, he's been good, not great. 274, 339, 480 with 32 bombs in 2022. 264, 345, 444 with 26 bombs and 682 plate appearances last year. One thing he's definitely going for him, now outside of all of the metrics are still very good, which I think is why even though the production's been not what people hoped since the breakout year, he's still up in this tier for sure. Obviously, he's still young, 23, 24 years old now, but he stays on the field, man. Like, I think I put out a tweet just looking at guys that had played the last three seasons since the COVID year, like over, was it 650 plate appearances? And there's only, I think it was four or five that had exceeded that amount in all 3 years. And Vlad Jr. was one of them. And obviously super high floor. Do you think he can get back up to being like maybe the number two guy here, Chris? What are your thoughts? Are you expecting more out of him? Or do you think this is what he is, like a 270-ish guy with about 30 home runs?
Based on the underlying data, there should be more. We know that 2021 is probably a career outlier at this point. He played minor league parks for a lot of the season, and it really worked out in his favor. A lot of the home runs came outside of Toronto, but he hits the ball extremely hard. He barrels it up well. The contact rates are fine. Like, they're solid. He's like league average chase, but he doesn't strike out a lot. So strikeout rate's going down, which is encouraging to see. And ultimately, I don't know what we see from Vlad. I know there's more in the tank. I certainly believe that he can get back to those levels, but he's got to lift the ball more. At the end of the day, I think that's the biggest issue. It's a really low launch angle. And I know you can look and say, oh, yeah, 10.5 degree launch angle this year. That's great. Yeah, it's fine, but it doesn't take into account the amount of ground balls he hits. Like, he's hitting fly balls and ground balls, and he actually lowered the ground ball rate, but still quite high at 45.3% this year. So ultimately, Vladdy has to just hit the ball at ideal launch angles more often than not, which he hasn't done. If he can do that, though, I think that there's 35, 40 home run pop, and he could hit 280, but he's going to have to figure out how to tweak some things and really get back to that guy that he was in 2021, because that player we haven't seen in several years. I would say the upside's there for him to jump back up, but right now it's hard to. Some people still value him as like a first round player, which is wild. Like, I've seen discussion about him still being first round talent, and I just don't see that for Dynasty. Like, we haven't seen that version of him. Like, we're talking about an outlier season at this point. That's not very valuable, in my opinion. So it's a weird evaluation at this point of who is Vlad Guerrero Jr. I think the jury's still out, but ultimately I'm not as much of a believer as I once was.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I think he's better than the last couple of years, but obviously that 2021 year, I don't think that's going to come back anytime soon. Like, that probably goes down as his best year of his career, but it definitely is the upside for more. And I basically agree with 110% with everything you just said. I just pulled up the ADP mock that I'm in for Dynasty Dugout here that Chris is putting on, and Vlad went 2-4 in mine, so that is pick 19 overall. I went behind Freeman and Olson, who went back-to-back 14-15 to end the first round, but then I got Harper right after the pick after Vlad. I got Harper at 2-5, so I was ecstatic about that, even if it's just a mock, but... Yeah, so he's still in that pushing first round range, or at least still top 20. I have him closer to 30 in my rankings. I think that's a fair range. I got 32 to be exact, and I have Olson at 24. I got Freeman at 26, and then Pete at 34. But with Pete there, Chris, yeah, we both have him at 5. Obviously, the power, he's been one of the best sources of home runs over the last few years, back-to-back 40 homer years, averaging about 41 home runs a year over the last 3 years. But the average dip from being in the 260 to 270 range previously down to just 217 this past year. Quality contact was still very good, 14.7% barrel rate, though the hard hit rate has dropped each of the last 3 years, still over 40%. K rate still keeps that in check. I think it's going to be a massive outlier. Pete Alonso's, if you can get him, he's still going to cost you a high price tag. Like, the contact metrics and plate discipline metrics don't show a 217 hitter. Even the XBA was 246, much higher. Like, zone contact's right around league average. Chase is actually better than league average. Whiff is barely below league average. So this is a guy that should get back up at least above 250, especially given the quality of contact that he has. So he was another one that, like, if he gets back up into that 250 plus range, or back up to the average range that he was, maybe he's the number two guy. There's so much movement in this second tier, Chris, but where are you at on Alonzo right now? Do you think there's a bounce back coming from him as well?
Yeah, I think it's a good time to buy on him. You look at the profile and already hit on it. I think that there's a lot of reason to be optimistic, because not a lot changed overall in the profile when you dig in a little bit. Yeah, the hard hit rate was down a little bit, but not significant. The average EV was down less than half a mile an hour. That's not significant. The barrel rate was actually up. So overall barrel rate was up like 2.5%. That seems pretty substantial as well. You look at like the pitch by pitch data. Like, he went in 2022 against off speed pitches, which like changeups, etc., had a 339 batting average against, had a 119 against in 2023. So that's certainly an interesting thing to note. And he struggled more with breaking balls, really all pitch types, to be honest with you. But you look and, you know, the batted ball distribution's good. Like, he pulled more balls. He had a healthy number of line drives and fly balls still. And he hit those hard. Contact rates were still fine. The zone contact was down a little bit, but not any reason to be concerned. He chased way less, a career low chase rate. That's really good to see. And the contact rate was down just a hair. It's nothing in the profile that I'm seeing that's like, okay, like, here, there's a glaring issue with him, other than the fact that his first pitch swing rate was down 10%. That may be the biggest thing that I see here. His overall swing rate was down about 6%. So those things are worth noting, but at the end of the day, like, I think Alonzo bounces back and is a really solid hitter again, and one that maybe it's a good buy right now.
Yeah, I definitely think he's a good buy. There's still the upside to be that number two first baseman. I think any of these kind of guys in the second tier absolutely could. So yeah, definitely think there's a good buying opportunity there with Alonzo. Just people looking at that 217 average. I think he got a little bit unlucky there. I don't think he's a 217 guy moving forward. I think he's closer to the 260, 270 guy that we saw in 2021 and 2022 than he was to last year. But another guy here, talking about potential number two guys, people can call me a homer. That's fine. But I think Tristan Casas has like that upside to get up into that tier, maybe not number two, but I think definitely into that tier. You saw, like, after he really settled in last year, from July 8th through the end of the season, there wasn't many better hitters in all of baseball, not just at this position. 216 plate appearances during that span, 319, 417, 622 slash line, 15 home runs, a 13.9% walk rate, and a 23.6% K rate. Here's ranks among first basemen after 7 July 8th with at least 100 plate appearances. Average tied for fourth. OBP also tied for fourth. Slugging second. WOBA second. WRC plus second. This is a guy that both you and I saw come up through the minor leagues, and he was quoted in an interview saying something along the lines of, asked like why he wasn't hitting many home runs, that he was just focusing on the other aspects of hitting, like going the other way, just working the count, having good quality of his bats. And then we all knew the power was there, and he started showing that second half of last year. So I don't see why he can't get up into be like a 270 type of guy with, I think, 35 home runs and plenty of counting stats are what he's capable of. And maybe he does that even in 2024, and he carries over this hot second half into 2024. So that's why right now, Casas is my number six first baseman, and he's starting to creep up towards that tier. Like, I think he's closer in my rankings to Pete Alonzo than a lot of people probably think he is. But where are you at, Kai? I know you have him seventh there. Do you echo that? Do you think he can get up into that second tier, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's highly possible, and you mentioned it with the progress in the second half, and everything looked really good. Actually, the Statcast data was better in the first half, like from a hard hit standpoint, but the barrel rates were still good. Like, you still had a 14% barrel rate in the second half, a 90 mile an hour average, 46% hard hit rate. Those are all still very good. But I think the breakout really came to pass because the contact skills just improved in a big way. And we saw the improvements there. Casas chased less balls. He made more contact. He showed just to be patient and waiting on a pitch to hit. And so ultimately, I think this bat, he'll be 24 in January. So the upside's there for a 30-plus home run bat consistently. I think that the batting averages will be solid too. So I think some see him as like a 230 type hitter. And projections actually give him pretty, at least Steamer's the only one out, they give him a pretty reasonable 260 projection with a 370 OBP. That's really something to see there, actually. I'm a bit shocked given a smaller major league sample. But yeah, you look, if he hits 30 home runs and hits 260 with a 370 OBP, then there's some really good value there. And there's no reason that he's not all that much different from Pete Alonso at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty spot on. Yeah, I also agree that it's shocking to see just because they tend to go more conservative, especially with the younger guys. But yeah, I think it's legit. Yeah, the zone contact rates weren't, you know, great last year. They're below average. But yeah, I think they'll be fine. I think he'll probably have run around average contact rates, and given his quality of contact, good home park as well. And he's a guy, you know, people have heard me say that lefties at Fenway usually isn't the greatest fit unless they have like a big boy power. And Tristan Casas has big boy power. Like he's got, maybe he's not David Ortiz, but he's got 35 home run power in that bat. And I don't think the deep right field at Fenway out towards the bullpens will really hinder him much at all. And plus he's a very patient guy. So yeah, big OBP potential, 370 plus long-term. He was almost 370 last year, 367 last year, 365 for his career so far, and nearly 600 plate appearances. So yeah, definitely a lot to like there. Nice four category guy that could be probably really impactful in three of them, or even four if you play in OBP formats. But this back half of the top 10 as well, Chris, is pretty interesting. And you got a nice little mix of players. Like you got some young guys. You got, you know, the former MVP with Cody Bellinger. You got Vinny Pasquantino. What do we see out of him? You know, Torkelson, we both have at 10. Let's go to Torkelson, though, right now. Obviously, he's big name. Obviously, was one of the top prospects, top draft pick as well. Do you see Torque? Similar question I'll pose to you. As we were just talking about Casas, do you think Torque has the upside to get up into that second tier?
I'm not sure. Like, how much better can Torkelson be than he was last year is the question. And he had a good year last year. But how much better is he going to be? Like, he was a compiler, had 159 games, 684 plate appearances, hit 31 home runs, excuse me, and then slashed 233, 313, 446. So where I do see the room for improvement is in the slash line, but I'm not sure we see much more power out of him than we saw last year. He did turn on in the second half, and 19 of those home runs did come in the second half of the season. He still only hit 238 over that span. He's run really low BABIPs, had a 261 BABIP in the second half this year, led to that 238 average and 318 OBP. But still, it doesn't inspire like a ton of confidence that he's going to be like a star by any means. I think that Torque's going to be a fun player. Like, he'll be fine, but I just don't think that he pushes up like much past here. Like, I'm ranked 10th. I could see him jumping to like 7th maybe, but he's not going to pass any of the top five. Probably not going to pass Casas or even Bellinger. So it's just hard to see him like moving up too much.
Yeah. I think back in the top 10 is where he's probably going to settle in, which is fine. It's still a starting caliber first baseman. Absolutely. I think the average can definitely tick up from where it is now. I don't think he's a 233. I don't think he's a 233 guy. I think he can get up into that 250, 260 range for sure. And yeah, 250, 260 with 30, 35 home runs. And hopefully that lineup gets better around him. He scored 88 runs last year, which is more than I thought he had. And he had 94 RBI. So yeah, if he's in the vicinity of 30 and 100 with 85, 90 runs and a 250, 260 average, that's definitely top 10 caliber. Yeah, but I just don't see him getting up into that next level. Like, I think best case scenario for him, yes, I agree, not ahead of the top five, not ahead of Casas, not ahead of Belly. I think best case scenario is like the 8-9 range, which he's basically already almost in now. But And he's in a similar tier for me as Vinny and Encarnacion Strand. But yeah, I just don't see him getting up into top five. I just don't think that's possible. But top 10, that's still pretty solid. And I think people, given where he was, like the value was this time last year, I think anybody that rosters him in Dynasty Leagues will probably take that for sure. Maybe it's not what we thought he could do a couple years ago, but still a pretty solid outcome. All right, let's move in. Actually, before we move on to the next set of our rankings, we're going to talk a little Vinny Pasquantino here, Chris. We both still have him top 10, me 8, you 9. So I think that speaks volumes to the fact that we're still very high at him. Everyone knows I love Vinny P, and I think you do as well. But obviously, bit of a wild card right now. Is this more so than anybody else in our respective top 10s, just because he's coming back off the shoulder surgery here. And obviously, we never know how those will affect power. All the video I've seen, granted, it's just video, him in a cage that he posted. So it looks positive, but at the same time, we don't know until he gets back in the game action. I think this could be a case, Chris, where if he looks really good in spring training, that value shoots way up. But do you think he's a guy that can get up in that second tier? I mean, even as much as I love NEP, I don't think he has that level upside. I think he's going to be in that Torkelson range where he's just like a 7-10 option at this position.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's important to know what you have in a Vinny P. Like, I don't think he's going to be an elite power bat by any means, but I do think that the contact skills are really good. I do worry, has he returned from injury? That's obviously a big thing. We saw the performance kind of trend downward all year, and he may have been playing hurt. Obviously, we know that he was out from, I think, early June. Yeah, early June through the rest of the season. I think that Vinny P is a strong contact hitter. Like, we've seen that. We've seen him put up really strong contact rates with decent exit velocities, too. There's certainly juice in the profile. Unfortunately, he plays at a pretty bad park for home runs. And with someone that has his kind of power, not to say like bad power by any means, but for his swing, it just doesn't fit well in Kansas City. You look at the expected home run rates, and in 2022, he hit 10. And there was the only two stadiums he would have had less in, according to the expected home runs, would be San Francisco and Boston. Hit 8 last year before the injury. And most of the stadiums he averaged way more, like, or was at least expected to hit way more. So it's just the batted ball distribution doesn't fit the park well. But at the end of the day, like, I think Vinny P may end up being a 280 hitter consistently, with even potential for higher batting averages at that. I don't know. I think he is going to have a hard time like piercing through that tier that you're talking about, because it's just so good. Like, he has talent. He's got plenty of upside, but at the end of the day, is it enough to pass those guys? And I'm not sure that's the case.
Yeah. I'm basically pretty much in agreement with that. And quick shout out to Vinny P though. People that follow him on Twitter, he's getting married this week. So
nice.
Congratulations to Vinny P. He's posting some pictures of him as fiance that he said she's absolutely hate when she gets back on social media. Posts a lot of pictures at the ballpark. He is a New York Jets fan, though. Like, my one issue with Vinny P is that he's a Jets fan, but that's the only issue, then that's all right. But moving on to the next set of our rankings here, we'll go 11 through 25. For me, that is old reliable Paul Goldschmidt, Spencer Steer, Josh Naylor, Christian Walker, Nathaniel Lowe, Yandy Diaz, Alec Bohm, Kyle Manzardo, Ryan Mountcastle, Rhys Hoskins at 20, Andrew Vaughn, Isak Paredes, Samuel Basalo, Ty France, and Tyler Locklear round out my 25. Chris, who you got?
All right. So at 11, it's Paul Goldschmidt, followed by Spencer Steer, Kyle Manzardo, Nathaniel Lowe, and Christian Walker. 16 through 20 is Christian Encarnacion Strand, Yandy Diaz, Alec Bohm, Rhys Hoskins, and Andrew Vaughn. And then it finishes out with the last five of Ryan Mountcastle, Isak Paredes, Ty France, Anthony Rizzo, and Luke Rayleigh, which I'm not really sure how I feel about either of those in that spot. But yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this entire range. These guys aren't bad by any means. It's just there's not a lot of excitement for me after like low. Diaz is fine. Obviously, the StatCast page is always pretty damn impressive. Can never really translate it into – this is probably the best year of his career, I think, from an offensive standpoint. But still, like, I don't think he's ever going to have that full breakout that everyone's hoping for. Bohm is decent, not a standout. Mountcastle's up and down. Vaughn underperforming, at least to expectations. So, yeah, a lackluster range of the rankings. But wanted to start out this section, you know, a guy that I think might be the biggest ranking difference in this top 25 between yours and mine. That's Christian Encarnacion Strand. I have him 9, and you have him 16. What goes into your ranking there of why you have him a bit lower than I do?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I don't necessarily have him like that much lower, like from an overall standpoint. Like, he checks in at 140 overall for me. And okay. So like, it's like just a weird tier of like a lot of guys, a big cluster. But I think while there's plenty of upside, like, I do think that there's some concerning aspects about Encarnacion Strand's game that just leads me to wonder, what does the offensive output look like? The contact rates obviously are lower than you'd like to see. And he's highly aggressive, chases a ton out of the zone. And while we did see the chase rates improve throughout last year, like the first couple of months in AAA, he was chasing at like a 52% clip, which is just crazy. But it turned in the right direction, but he's always been a hyper-aggressive chase type. And so that's the biggest concern with Encarnacion Strand and just what kind of contacts he's going to make. No denying the power. We know it's legit. It's the ball hard. He plays in a great park. It's like a prove-it year for him. I think he probably jumps Christian Walker this year. That makes sense. Probably jumps Nathaniel Lowe as well. Lowe, it depends on the output. It's been interesting seeing what and who Nathaniel Lowe is. But I think this year will be pretty telling. And I think he's a good buy right now, but that's beside the point. Yeah. But yeah, Strand, power for days, questionable contact, the batted ball distribution. It's just an interesting profile for me.
No, it absolutely is. And this is a guy that, if you're in an OPP format, does get dinged because really outside of AAA last year when he had a 10.5% walk rate, and then way back in, actually not way back, 2022, but when he was in high A, 9.1%, every other level, it's been like sub 7% walk rate, including with Cincinnati where he was at 5.8%. So it definitely gets dinged a bit in OPP formats because of that. And yeah, absolutely very aggressive. At the same time, like, I think the contact skills, again, they are, I think, a bit below average. I'm not concerned by them, especially given the ballpark that he plays half his games in. I think that's going to help him run a higher BABIP. I wonder what his BABIP was this year with the 336. Okay, that is above average, but I thought it was going to be a little bit higher than that. But obviously, great park. The quality of contact is very good, 10.5% barrel rate. With Cincinnati last year, hard hit rate was pushing 50%, EV over 90 miles an hour. So given that, in his home park, he already had 13 home runs and 241 plate appearances. He's getting 650. I think he has 35-plus home runs. So yeah, I like him a little bit better than Torque long-term, and I'm probably in the minority there, and that's fine. So I think the average probably is in similar range. I think there's a bit more power upside in a better home park, which is why I lean towards Encarnacion Strand. But yeah, I'm definitely higher than most on him. I fully admit that, and I'm okay with it because I think there's a, like I said, 250, 260, and 35-plus home runs, and I think that lineup should be pretty good for a long time now with all the good young talent they have, so probably a lot of RBIs, a decent amount of runs scored as well. Hopefully he can get on base at least at like 320 clip or something like that, so it's not a complete zero there. But yeah, there's a lot to like here. But right off the bat, and this range for us at 11 for both of us, Paul Goldschmidt, Chris, it's 36 years old, so he's older than I think maybe everybody else on this list. Still a good year last year, nothing wrong with it. 25 home runs, 80 RBI, 89 runs scored, kind of a drop off from his previous 2 years and then previous few years before the COVID year as well. But this was his lowest average since 2019, and second lowest average of his career over a full season. The lowest slug of his career over a full season, 447. Previous low was 466. He was 578 last year. Again, 36 years old, Chris. Obviously, if you're rebuilding, you really have no need for a Paul Goldschmidt, but would you still look his way, Chris, if you were a contending team that might have had a hole at first base, given the fact that price tag's probably not massive right now?
Yeah, he might be a pretty good buy in reality, just for a contender, like you mentioned, has a hole at first base or in a deep league where you may need to fill a spot and can acquire him. Goldschmidt's definitely trending in the wrong direction. You look, and last year he hit 268 with a 363 OBP, which is fairly odd considering he hit 317 in 2022 and 294 the year before that. But has anything really changed all that much? The contact's still there. He's still really low chase rate. So at the end of the day, like, Goldschmidt's profile actually not all that different from a contact standpoint. He still hit the ball really hard. Even for his age, he had a 91.3 mile an hour average EV, which is 81st percentile among all hitters. So really solid there. 12% barrel rate's good. 50% hard hit rate, that's extremely solid. That's 93rd percentile. Actually 51%, excuse me. So at the end of the day, I do think some probably bad luck ran his way that probably caused him to see a little bit of a downturn. And Father Time catches up with everyone. Goldschmidt is 36. I don't really think that he's done. And I do think there's an interesting buying opportunity here, especially if you need a first baseman in a deeper league. I don't think he's going to take that much to acquire, personally.
What do you think it would take? Let's look at, if you're trading prospects. Do you think like a top 50 prospect would get it done?
Probably. I don't really see why it wouldn't. I'm not going to pay like a, I'm trying to think of like a name. Like, I could see doing like a top 50 to 75 prospect, like straight up. I could see that happening. It depending like, on like the situation of the player.
Yeah, maybe I think one who I think you have him in that range in your rankings, but like a Tyra Locklear type.
Yeah, I would move Locklear for Goldschmidt for a win now team. I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, I think that's the range we're talking about here. And yeah, I think if you're a contending team, you know, maybe his, obviously his best years are behind him, and maybe he doesn't even return to what we saw in, you know, 2022, 2020, or 2021. But if he can still be like what he was last year, which I think is definitely possible the next couple of years, like you mentioned, the metrics are still pretty solid. Yeah, I think definitely a solid target there that won't take a lot to acquire. But one that's, I think, pretty underrated right now, you know, going a bit younger here by about a decade, Josh Naylor. He quietly had a really good year. Maybe it's because he's in Cleveland and nobody really gets talked about a lot in Cleveland if you're not a pitcher and or Jose Ramirez. But look at the end of the year lines here, 495 plate appearances, 308 through 54, 489 slash line, 17 home runs, and 10 steals, Chris. You have him a bit higher than me. You pushed him up into your top 10. Sounds like you're pretty in on Josh Naylor right now.
Yeah, I think that Naylor's a really solid bet. I think there's some pessimism for a couple reasons. People talking about it being traded, which I don't see. His brother's on the team. I don't think that happens personally.
Agreed. Yep.
It just would screw the chemistry up. I don't think that happens. But, and then Manzardo being on the way too. So Manzardo's on the way. And then they also picked up Davison De Los Santos, the Rule 5, which I don't really see like being an issue at all. Honestly, I don't think he's going to make the team. I think he's going to be returned pretty quick. So ultimately, I think Naylor is going to play every day. First base, DH, he's played some outfield before. So he's going to get the reps. I have no questions about that. And I think Naylor does a lot of things very well. I think that Naylor obviously shows really good contact despite the aggressive approach. He's hyper-aggressive swing rates, and he chases at a pretty high clip as well. But he balances out that with really strong contact, 88% plus in the zone, which is really good. Over 80% overall contact rate. Those are both really solid rates, especially when you chase the kind of rate that he does. So that is a concern, but Naylor's made it work, and he's feasting on pitches in the zone, especially fastballs. mashes fastballs, and he hits all pitch types ultimately. And I believe in the power. It's not like big time power, but he's a 20 home run bat. He's got average power at best, and he hits at ideal launch angles too, which only really helps his case. Still young, 26. He's entering his prime, so I think Naylor is a pretty good bet. I would be picking him up where I could, because I think that the value, in my eyes, isn't going to be what it takes to get him. You can get him pretty cheap in relative return or relative cost.
Yeah, I definitely think he's underrated for sure. And I miss him. He's not super high on the upside here. I just have him as a back-end starting option here. I think that's why I have him ranked, like, was it 12th in my rankings here. Definitely solid. Like, plate approach has always been very good, or at least from the fact that he doesn't strike out or swing and miss too much. Never been a big walk rate guy, probably never will be. You know, at this point, he has, the last time he was above 9 or even above 8% was his rookie year, which was back in 2019. He's been around for he's had 5 years now in the major leagues. That's,
yeah.
Wow. He's only 26 years old, but I didn't realize he'd been in the league for 5 years now. But K rate's 13.7%, very solid there. And the power has been pretty consistent. He's been like 42-ish percent hard hit rate. Barrel rate right around 8%, give or take, and EVs between 89 and 90 miles an hour on average. Yeah, I think what he's done is very legit. I think maybe you could add a few home runs to this past year. Maybe 10 steals is probably what he's capped at. He's not fast. 60th percentile sprint speeds. Maybe he adds a few home runs, take away a few steals. But if you're looking at what he did last year, if he's like a 290-plus hitter with 20 home runs and 5 steals, pretty much what he did power speed-wise in 2022, but with a better slash line, I think that's what we're looking at here. Back end, starting first baseman, but agreed, very underrated for whatever reason. He doesn't have a sexy profile, but very solid profile. And yeah, I think he's definitely a good target right now for sure. Real quick before, we have a lot of listener questions we want to get to, but I wanted to really quickly talk about a guy that isn't even on either of our top 25s, but he did just sign the other day, so in the news, and that's Rowdy Tellez going to the Pittsburgh Pirates here, Chris. A trendy name this time last year, you know, early 2024 or 2023 drafts at the time, you know, 35 home runs the previous year, but only hit 13 home runs this past year and 351 plate appearances. Similar slash line outside of the slug dropping way down, but you can put up the 219 average when you're hitting 35 bombs, but when you're not hitting 35 bombs, that's an absolute problem. But do you think he's worth a buy low shot, given that he's pretty dirt cheap right now?
Yeah, I think he's going to play every day. I don't think there's any questioning that. We've seen him hit 35 home runs in 2022. He was really bad in 2023. But he's going to play, and I don't think he's going to be blocked by anybody. That's ultimately, 90-mile-an-hour exit velocity last year was still really good. Still ideal launch angles and sweet spot percentages. He seemed like a pretty similar player to what he's been throughout his career. You look at the contact rates, and they were actually up last year. So that's interesting to see. He was a little more passive, swinging less in the zone, but he still made good contact. I don't know. Like, it's a weird profile, but I think Rowdy can make it work.
Yeah, I think, again, the fact that he's pretty dirt cheap right now, I think it's worth taking a flyer. I think it's a low-risk move that potentially pays you solid dividends. I think he can get back up there. His metrics weren't that much worse. Yeah, the power metrics did go down a bit. 4% barrel rate, or 4% drop in barrel rate, 5.5% drop in hard hit rate. But I think he can get back up there. Maybe a fresh start. Nobody can take time from him. At least I don't think so. That lineup's not very good. So, yeah, he's only 28 years old. Yeah, I think he could have a nice little bounce back for sure. All right, let's get into our listener questions. We have a lot of them. We'll try to get to them all. We'll just do some quick hits here so we can get through more of them. First one is from Charlos at MacDaddyCharlos. Good Twitter handle there. Which first baseman are you buying this year, and which are you selling? I think I am buying – does anybody stand out for you, Chris, while I'm thinking of mine? I think Vinny P is a buy for me and a sell. Maybe Bellinger, given the high. And that's not me saying I don't
believe in Bellinger right now, but I do think the perceived value did go a bit higher than I thought it was going to. So maybe Bellinger's a good, at least got to explore options, see what you can get for him.
Yeah, I don't think that's, I think that's fine, at least to put out a feeler and see who am I buying. I think Mansardo's a good buy. I think that Nathaniel Lowe's a good buy, weird year. I think he could bounce back and provide solid value. I think that Rhys Hoskins is a really good buy, depending on his landing spot.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I like that. Yep.
He's still got big pop and good OBP skills. Like, he's not going to hit for a high average, but this position, he can get away with it. Like, he's going to really be a boost in OBP leagues. I think, and I know he's not ranked super high, but he is by some people. Isak Paredes is a sell.
Oh, yes. I meant to say him, too. Yeah, absolute sell.
I mean, 100%. 30 home run, like, bad. I just don't see that again. I could see the top guys I'm not really selling. I guess if any of the top guys I'm selling is Bellinger, but the other guys feel relatively safe.
Yeah.
So it's like Belly or Paredes if I'm selling one.
Yeah. No, I don't know why I didn't say Paredes. I've been like screaming that from the rooftops all offseason. I think the average does go up for Paredes because the contact skills are good. The approach is good. But yeah, the power, he perfected a pull approach. And I think that's just really hard to do. Year in, year out. 1 year, sure. 2 years, maybe. Annually, that's a really tough profile to make stick. All right, next question here from Timmy Z. Actually, we already did this. He said, I'm sure you'll touch on it and get plenty of asks, but what to expect from Vinny P? We did already cover that. Who is a good young outfielder to target in return for Nate Lowe? I feel like he is such an odd asset to own in dynasty leagues. I think pull up my go over to outfield here. So I have overall Lowe's in like the one kind of 125, 130 range overall for me. So if we're going outfielders in that same range that are on the younger side, I mean, that's actually not a ton. I do have Eloy in that range right now, about 10 spots below. Maybe you can get a buy low out of Eloy, and hopefully he can just stay healthy. There's not a lot of, Chaz. I think I have Chaz McCormick in that range too. I think that'd be a fair swap if you need outfield. Yoshida's in that range, but he's not like really young per se. Maybe Eloy. Kerry Carpenter, I have about 20 spots lower, and Kerry Carpenter's a decent target as well. So those are some names here. Do you have anybody else to add to that, Chris?
Looking in that range, let's see. I'm in a similar kind of spot to you. Let's see. And I think it's interesting, but I'd be like James Altman.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
I like Altman. The Dodgers may just go out and buy everybody and completely block him. So
it's always possible.
Yeah, it's a real possibility. Like Ian Happ, like he maybe costs a little bit too much, or Lars Nootbaar, but that kind of range of guys would be interesting to see.
Yeah, no, that's solid for sure. And next one from Aaron. How many years can I hope for Vlad Guerrero to be overvalued? I'm hoping this isn't the last. I think we already really hit on Vlad. Who has a better chance? Oh, this is a solid one. Who has a better chance to bounce back / breakout? Miguel Vargas, Jose Miranda, or Alec Burleson? Okay, I'm not saying Burleson. I don't know. I'm torn between Vargas and Miranda here. I think they both could bounce back, but at the same time, I've adjusted my long-term expectations for both of them. But I think those would be I'd go with one of those two. Not Burleson, though. I think he's definitely a couple of tiers below them, at least for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Vargas just gives me the most hope still. He needs to play every day. He probably needs to trade to play every day.
But yeah.
Miranda, I'm a little bit lower on, but I guess Vargas of any of those options.
Yep, I think I would lean Vargas as well. Next one from Kevin. How high should Torque and Cassis be drafted? Any preference here? Definitely Cassis for me. I'm not sure. I'm assuming he meant Dynasty. I have Cassis. Let's see. I have Cassis, I think, higher than most. Where do I have him? I have Cassis 39 overall, and Torque I have 83 at the moment. So that's my range. For redraft, they're probably a bit closer. I don't know if that's what you meant, but yeah, I have so top 40 for Cassis and 80 or so for Torque. How about you, Chris? Let's
see, Torque. Oh, my sheet is freezing. That's fun. I have Torque at 90. So I think you could bump up. Like I said, I think that Torque's upside is probably like pushing like 70, like 65 to 70. I still don't know if he can push past there, which is the concern with him. I have Casas at 60 overall right now.
Gotcha. All right. Next one from Nate Handy at Pitching Specs. Does some good work with prospects with his B-Sides podcast as well. He has kind of a, I think, tongue-in-cheek comment here. If Rowdy Tellez and Ryan Noda were your first baseman in a 16-team head-to-head, would you think about quitting fantasy forever or try and weather the storm, hoping on brighter days ahead? I think Tellez is a decent bounce back, but don't like him as my first baseman, that's for sure. And Noda, who knows what Noda can even give you. But next question here from Wes Stasik. When thinking about first baseman from a dynasty perspective, how much does age play a factor as compared to other positions? We see many upper-tier first basemen still hit well into the mid to late 30s versus other positions like shortstop where it's rare to find a 30-plus-year-old. I think that's a good point because, you know, I think Freddie Freeman, perfect example of that. Obviously, Freeman is now – is he 34 yet? If he's not 34, he's damn close to it. I can't find
for pretty sure he's 34.
Yeah, he just turned 34 about a month or two ago. But yeah, he's still like a top 25 guy for me, and that's, I think he's the only one. I'm trying to see, like, where's the next 34 year old or older in my rankings, just in period, in any position. Still scrolling. Altuve is not 34 yet. Still scrolling. George Springer is like the next one. He's way below. He's about 50-60 spots below him. So yeah, I think obviously there's the less, not as much rigor of that position, not as physically demanding. So that's why I mentioned with Harper, I'm glad he's moving to first base now. I think that could help him over the next half decade or so, stay in the field longer. So yeah, I think absolutely it factors in a decent amount for me at least.
Yeah. I think that the physical demand to play the position is just less, so you can be more successful for a longer run of time, like the demand of catching or the demand of being a shortstop. The demands on the body are just less at first base. So, you know, you can go a little bit deeper into your career playing the position and still be successful. And most of these guys, like, if they're not playing first, they're moving to DH, which also helps out too. They're getting reps between both positions. So, you know, hopefully that answers the question there.
All right, next one. This one's Casas or Torque long-term, and we both answered that.
Yeah.
Next one. This is a good one. I like this. And we touched on him a good amount in our prospects episode, but we'll answer this quickly here. Did Manzardo's AFL performance affect your outlook on his long-term fantasy value? No, not one bit for me, because I didn't really change my long-term outlook on him throughout the 2023 season. I think what more so his performance did was reassure people that his previous year wasn't a fluke and that 2023 was probably the fluke and that he's going to be fine and pretty damn good long-term. That's how I think of it, at least. I don't know about you, Chris.
Yeah, no, same. I didn't change my valuation on him at all, like during the regular season when he was not performing to par. So no, it didn't change much for me at all.
Next one from Brave Stats Farm. Vinny P? Please tell me all the reasons he's number one guy, positional draft value of the year. We hit on him. I think it all just depends on how the shoulder comes back and where the power is, really. But yeah, we already did a hit on him. Next one, does Spencer Jones have a chance to play first in the future? I think he does. He's played both outfield and first base. He's a good athlete, so I think he could stick in the outfield. I think it a lot depends on what the Yankees do this year and next and who they may or may not bring in. But yeah, I think he definitely has a chance for sure.
Yeah, he plays a fine outfield. He moves well enough. But at the end of the day, I think that first base is a possibility. But I'm not ruling out that he plays outfield as well.
Similar question or in terms of people playing first base. Next question, not too many elite ones under 25 or in minors. Do you see Bisalo and Montes being first basemen? I think we both think that Bisalo does go to first base from our prospect episode. Montes, probably, if he's not corner outfield, he's going to be first base. Yeah, I think he could. So are you in agreement with that, Chris?
Yeah, I think he's a first baseman, honestly.
Yeah, probably. He's a big dude. Not big in a bad way, big in a good way, but still a larger human being. So yeah, first base is probably within a legit possibility. Next one here. I want to hear about Henry David. I'm not sure why. Wrong position, sorry, Ivan, but and Andrew Vaughn. breakouts this year. I think we both think Davis breaks out to a degree. Vaughn, though, Chris, I don't think so. I think this is what we're getting with Vaughn. The metrics are everything about him is just like fine. Nothing's bad in the profile. Nothing's really good either. I don't love, obviously, the White Sox are just tough team to really invest in outside of Luis Robert right now, but hard hit rate's good. Approach is solid. Doesn't walk a lot. Doesn't K a lot either. Barrel rate's solid. He's just a solid player, but I don't really think there's that next level. I think he's like a 260, 270 guy that hits about 20 home runs, and that's about it.
Yeah, he's a very boring profile, and I don't ultimately care for him for fantasy purposes, to be honest. So he's just okay. Nothing special, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think just the general perceived value of him is higher than I'm going to want to go on Andrew Vaughn just because of the former top five pick, top prospect status. But next question, we got a couple more questions here. Odds Manzardo is the first baseman in Cleveland on opening day. Another thing we hit on, but Chris, you're pretty confident that he's going to be the first baseman.
I think he's going to be. I don't think Davison De Los Santos changes that. And that's, to me, he's the guy.
Yep.
With a decent spring training. I'll put that caveat on it. He lays an egg during spring training.
Which we never know. But yeah, even if he's not, obviously the ETA is very soon. The last three, we've actually hit on these last three. Is Spencer Torkelson an all-star level first baseman? Maybe. I guess he'd see some all-star games in his career. Not like a ton of them, but
yeah.
Then the last two are about Cassis. Do we think he can prove to be a top five first baseman? I say yes. Chris, what say you?
Yeah, I think he's more than capable of that.
Yep. And then the last one's about similar about Manzardo, which we just answered. So I think that's going to wrap us up.
Did have one from the Discord if we want to. We've hit on it, but they ask, could you compare Vinny P and Naylor for points leagues? And they ask if Manzardo would affect Naylor kind of in the same boat. So Vinny P versus Naylor for points leagues. I think that for me, Naylor probably plays down a bit in a points league because of his aggressive nature. Yeah. And while the average, like it says, run good averages, he's not going to run high OBPs because he's aggressive and he's not going to take a walk very often. But Vinny P on the flip side kind of does take those walks.
Yep.
And he makes enough contact. And so Vinny P probably plays up in a points league. I'd say Naylor plays down in a points league. So that's where I'm at on him. I don't know if you agree there.
Yep. I 100% agree. And I think Naylor's going to be a guy that's going to have decent OBPs just because he hits for a high average just by default. But yeah, Vinny P is a guy that he's always walked at a high clip and doesn't strike out a lot. And yeah, these types of guys definitely play up. That's why Andy Diaz, a guy that plays up, guys like that play up in points formats. Yeah, I definitely think Vinny P for me as well. Always good way to end the show, picking Vinny P for something. But that is going to wrap up our first base rankings here. Again, make sure to check out the prospects version of this from earlier this week, episode 255. And we'll be back next week. We got second base on tap for next week. We still got two episodes, and then we'll take a little bit of a pause from these, at least during Christmas week, but hammering right along here. It's a fun time of year, diving into our rankings, always a fun process, but we will see you all next week. But until then, everyone take care.
My name is Amanda. I work with women who are trying to quit smoking, and I have some tips for you in case you're pregnant or thinking about having a baby. First thing is, keep trying to quit, or better yet, don't start smoking. It can cause premature birth, which can then increase the risk of your baby having developmental delays, problems with eyesight, breathing, and more. So don't give up. There are people like me who are here to support you, because I know what can happen if you don't quit. Your baby could be born 2 months early and weigh only 3 pounds. She could be in the NICU for almost a month, put in an incubator and fed through a feeding tube that goes through her nose down into her little stomach. I know that because I smoked while I was pregnant, and that's what happened to my little baby. I quit. You can too.
Quit your way. Call 1-877-YOU-CAN-NOW or visit tobaccofreeflorida.com. Developed by CDC.